This is ESPN Crick Info.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another bout of Talking T20 here on ESPN Crick Info. With me, Daniel Norcross. I am joined today by the youth wing of the writers team, Matt Roller and Bard Wodge. Now then, chaps, we've had finally some more cricket, but rain, most importantly. Rain has suddenly come to this glorious, once green but now straw-coloured land, and caused merry havoc in, of all places, the South Group, which has pleased a lot of people up north who feel unfairly stereotyped for living in cold, wet and dreary conditions. And we have had, let me count up the number of games, 14 games I think it is this week. Only one no result in the North Group. Three no results in the South Group. We've seen some ups, we've seen some downs, we've seen Derbyshire coming back from the dead to challenge once again. We've seen some extraordinary performances. Martin Guptill's 100 in 36, what was it, remind me?
Yeah, 30, is it 36? 35, I think I had it as, but...
35, yeah, but then he's out, of course, yes, because he was out next ball.
Yeah.
We've had some pretty dismal bowling performances as well. We'll come to some of them. Warwickshire's two test stars, Wokes and Rankin, going for 110 in their eight overs between them, which is fairly impressive. That was against Yorkshire, of course. Yorkshire have had an up and down week in many ways. They thought they had Adil Rashid on a white ball contract, and then they didn't. He did play, though. We did get a game. By the way, how did he get on in that game? Have you all over that one?
I wasn't, actually, but I think he went on quite well, didn't he?
I think so.
Did he get three for...
Yeah, he bowled very well in the middle overs and sort of broke the back of the Birmingham run chase.
Well, I also heard that he wasn't overly booed, so...
That's pleasant.
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, if that's the best you could say about your day. I wasn't overly booed, Governor. But that is a big loss to Yorkshire, and they've been fairly vocal about it. But let us start in the North Group. Now, I say we've got the youth wing in. Just describe, Matt, you, where are you based? Are you south or north based?
So I'm based at, near Salisbury in Wiltshire, but had the joy to be at the only washout in the North Group yesterday.
Oh, Worcester.
Thankfully, had a very nice selection of coronation chicken sandwiches, so just about worth the journey.
But, that's true. They do a good coronation chicken sandwich at Worcester, and some nice crisps on a paper plate.
Yeah, very much so, and some biscuits at the back. So.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bardwedge.
Yeah, so I'm based in London. So yep. Not far from the Oval and Lords. I was there at the Oval on Friday night. Again, another good selection of food, actually. Very nice Thai's chicken curry.
Impressive.
Yeah, and it was another rain-affected match, but luckily we actually got some cricket this time. 10-over bash, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later.
We will. But in that case, so I've got to go into the North Group simply because it's been a week where there's been genuine change in the South Group, as we'll discover shortly. It's sort of a bit static. It's as you were, really. But in the North Group... Derbyshire, let's start with them. 4 points from their two matches. Billy Yodelman, second in the averages, with an average of 157, slightly skewed by the number of not-outs. He picked up two not-outs this week. 250s, a 57 against Leicestershire. 71 not-out against Yorkshire. Big win for them against Yorkshire. And to what do we attribute this? Is this, Matt, just the nature of T20? Not that it's a lottery, but that you can... come back from what looked like the dead. It looked like Derbyshire and Northants, for all the world, we're going to prop up that group from now until August, and that was all there was going to be about it. But suddenly, they come back with two thumping wins. The one against Leicester in a grudge match, and that one against Yorkshire. Huge win.
Well, I think, yeah, as you say, it is very much a case of having had a poor start to the season in both the One Day Cup and the Championship. I think the introduction of John Wright as specialist T20 coach has been a very important factor there. And having arrived at the club about a week before the tournament starts, is always going to be difficult for him to have his say, get to know this year's group of players. He's also joined, of course, by Grant Bradburn, the Scotland coach. He's brought over Sharif, the seam bowler, and Callum McLeod, who have both performed pretty well so far.
Quick note on Callum McLeod. He has performed well, but he had the distinction in the last match, I believe, of being run out without facing a ball, which is cruel. It's one of the great cruelties of cricket. I love it. I'd love to see a man run out without facing a ball.
It was always fun, but I'm sure there'll be some England fans feeling that might be some retribution for...
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, what, for batting really, really well against him and winning them the game, yeah. It is a turnaround, Bard Rodge, for Derbyshire, and it's not off the back of spectacular performances, is it? I mean, let's face it, this week they got 150 for 4 to beat Leicester's 149. They overcame 166 from Yorkshire, an unspectacular kind of target. Is this something about their bowling attack? We've been talking about it. David Hopps, a grand old man of Crick Info, whose predictions have been a little off the mark. He did, at the start of the season, tip Derbyshire's bowling attack. And have we got to give him a bit of kudos because finally that unit's sort of coming together?
I think we do, actually.
Oh, damn.
unfortunately. But I think their bowling has really come into it, as you said. They restricted them to, two quite low scores, between 150 and 170, I think.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it's won in their bowling, really. I think they've got two overseas signings, haven't they?
Yeah.
Is it Riaz and Rampal?
It's an interesting one, the Derbyshire attack, because of its international nature. They've got Lockie Ferguson, the New Zealand quick, who's really impressed me. He was bowling in the mid-90s on television the other night. He looks a great player, but they've also got Hardisville Yuen, Ravi Rampal, as you say, Wahab Riaz. There's a real international field.
How have they managed to wangle that? For the listeners at home who don't 100% understand what constitutes an overseas player, are you guys all over this?
There's some EU contract, sort of EU passports involved.
Rampal.
I think Rampal is through marriage or something like that.
Right.
Qualifies as non-overseas. Viljoen is also a Coldpack player. Was part of the sort of great South African exodus a year or so ago.
Yep.
Riaz and Ferguson are the official overseas players.
What do you make of Bard Rodge, the sticking your eggs in the bowling basket? To me, in T20, it makes quite a lot of sense. Does leave you potentially exposed, but you're going to use your bowlers, aren't you, every game. They're going to get four overs, whereas your overseas batsmen, I mean, as Surrey have seen with Maddinson, can come off or not come off. Like, conversely, with Finch, it has come off every time. We'll talk about that shortly. But with bowlers, does it make a bit more sense?
I think it does. It's a lot more consistency, I guess, over four overs versus one innings, as you said, because batting is sort of a lottery in T20 cricket to a certain extent. Anything can really happen. But if you have your four-over spell, even if you get hit in one over, you can always come back well. I think having some of the experience as well of Wahab Riaz and Ravi Rampal, who have played a lot of international cricket over the years, I think that's something that can really, really benefit a side. I think it really takes a lot of pressure off your batting, knowing worst comes to worst, you've got these four quality bowlers ready to defend a low to modest total.
And real pace as well, Matt, because, you know, it's getting a little bit fashionable at the moment to try and pack your side with mystery spinners. Leg spinners abound. Aren't they? I think 15 out of 18 counties have got a leggy of some description. I mean, we're including the likes of Scott Borthwick in that, but, you know, Joe Denley. Derbyshire said, well, that's not necessarily the way to go. They've got pace. I mean, they do have. They've got Critchley.
Critchley,
of course. Although Critchley strikes me more now as a batsman who bowls occasional leg spin. But then, I suppose, what's Borthwick and Denley. But raw pace there, that's a little bit out of the zeitgeist, isn't it?
It is, and it's also... Derbyshire are unusual among the teams in the North Group in that they've actually bowled pretty well this season. If you look at the rest of the North Group, it's been absolute carnage. You look at Birmingham Bears and North Hands both have economy rates over the course of the season in double figures, which is, I think, unique across T20 history. You touched on Critchley. I think he's a very interesting one as well, and he obviously won that game against Yorkshire, hit 22 off 5 Tim Bresnan balls in the final over of the run chase. He's a guy who's 21. He's clearly got some guys who like him in the ECB setup. He was on the Lions tour of the West Indies. He played for the North in the series that you watched out there.
He did.
He's one to keep an eye on for the future. I was chatting to Stuart McGill this morning, the Australian leg spinner, and he's his sort of mentor and definitely thinks he's a potential England prospect.
Really, with the ball?
As a true all-rounder, he said, he reckons he's good enough to get in the side as a batsman and as a bowler.
Well, that would be exciting. I'd certainly been impressed with his batting. His batting's the side of it that's come on more, I'd say. But then, you know, see, these are tough conditions to learn your art as a leg spinner. Now, you touched on an incident this week, of course, with Critchley. 22 off those 5 balls from Tim Bresnan. Well, Tim Bresnan, he took to Twitter. I've always wanted to use that phrase, so I have done just gratuitously. Can you tell us, Matt, tell us what Tim Bresnan's tweet was, because it contains, there's a lot of unpacking to do here.
Yeah, so Breslin started with not at my bestest game, but hats off to that lad at the end.
That
great
lad.
Striking. That's the game. Bowling the death over his hero or villain scenario. I've had more wins than losses. Three big games at Fortress HQ coming up. Hashtag on to the next one.
So there you go. That's the pressure that the man is under, despite having won Ashes and heaven knows what else he has to take to Twitter after being taken down by that lad, Matt Critchley, with those 22 or 5. It is cruel. I mean, he touched on a couple of things there, Bardwaj, doesn't he?
He does.
About being, you know, bowling at the death. Bit of a lottery, isn't it?
It is a bit of a lottery. I like his optimism there at the end. Hashtag on to the next one. I think it's quite a positive way to end that.
Yeah.
I was a bit surprised by the use of that lad, as we picked up. I think if you get hit for 22 in an over, you at least have the grace to remember the person who did that to you.
You might even tag him into the tweet.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's on Twitter, isn't he? At Matt Critchley. That's not the hardest. That did seem. I don't know. It might have just been. That might just be the way Tim Breslin speaks. You know, it might have meant nothing more by it. But it's quite something, isn't it, for a lad to do that to an experienced bowler? I mean, he's going to take a huge amount of confidence from that, you'd think.
Yeah, I think he said he's 21, isn't he, Critchley? And Breslin has years of international experience playing for England, and to be able to do that to someone who's had such a long career is very impressive striking. Then you have to admit, but maybe it shows then this new generation of young players is the way forward and the way T20 is going.
That was one of two matches that Yorkshire played. They won the other one, of course. They beat Birmingham Bears. They are another of David Hopps's early season picks. And, well, they've got 5 points from 7 games. They've lost 4 now. So they're not in terminal decline, but looking at that group, the North group, let's run you through it. Lancs and Worcestershire at the top with 11 points from 8 games. Then Durham and Yorkshire with 10 and 8 points. From 7 games. Notts, 8 points from 8. Leicester and Derby back in the mix with 6 points from 7 games. Then Birmingham with 5. But Northants, because Northants have been so woeful, you kind of think that it's going to take 15 or 16 points to get into that top 4, don't you think, in the North group, Matt?
Yeah, I think quite possibly. And also, if you look at recent seasons in the Blast, it's often a case of fine margins. In the South group last year, Gloucester came bottom of it, but were 2 points off a quarter final. And if you think about the sort of the potential for them to have lost one close game, and there it is, literally 5 runs either way, can be the difference between coming bottom of the group and sneaking into the quarters.
Exactly. And therefore, with Birmingham having got 5 points from 7 games, we're looking really at a point when they could probably only afford to lose, especially with there's a bit of rain around, lose one more game, maybe 2 at the absolute outside. There's 7 remaining. Despite the fact that Ian Bell has been scoring runs for fun, as they say. Is he leading run scorer in this year's competition, I think?
Yeah, I think once he got 329 runs.
See, that's not shabby, is it?
Average of 65.8.
Pollock, the man that we wanted to look at the start of the season, David Hopps was very excited by Pollock. He hasn't quite had the season he wanted to. What's been the problem with Birmingham this season? Is it their batting? Is the batting doesn't look too bad to me, or is it, as you alluded to, just leaking runs?
I think it's got to be the issues with the ball. They've struggled for any kind of consistency. They've struggled to have any kind of bowler that's getting those match-winning spells. And Henry Brooks, of course, is out for the rest of the season with a stress fracture, the 18 or 19-year-old, I think he is.
At best, he has that stress fracture now, isn't it? It's always a way. And if you're going to be a fast bowler in this day and age, you have to have your stress fracture.
True. It is a worrying trend for the ECB and their pace programme that all these young bowlers keep getting stress fractures. And even the leg spinners, Mason Crane, is obviously out for the rest of the season with a stress fracture at the back, and you think, what on earth is going on somewhere at Loughborough?
You know, maybe just, you know, the milk hasn't got the right amount of calcium in it anymore. I have no idea, but it does seem absolutely bizarre. They're a side who have got struggles with the ball. Obviously, the elephant in the room is Northants. Now, this is a side that Tim Wigmore wrote a very long and involved article about, the money ball tactic that Northants have brought in. And articles like that can look absolutely superb when a relatively impoverished county is punching well above its weight, figuratively, not literally. But this season, they have quite definitely punched below that weight. 7 matches. They picked up their first point last week in a rain-affected game, so they got no result. This week, it's back to the familiar ways, being absolutely marmalised by Worcestershire. Set of 188... 189 for 1, Worcester, and they did that in 13.1 overs. I know Martin Guptill, 102, talked about that already, 12 fours, 7 sixes, Travis Head as well, Joe Clark. They're an impressive batting lineup, but Northants, I mean, 13 overs to concede that. That is a familiar refrain this season, isn't it?
The worst thing about that as well for Northants will be the fact that they were looking forward to the return of Richard Gleeson so much from injury. He was one of the stars of their season last year, really looked like a great find with the ball. People talking about him as a potential BPL. I think he went to the BPL, people saying he might get an IPL deal. And his first over looked pretty good against Guptill. He was 2 off 7, was Guptill, during that innings. Dropped at slip by Richard Levy at the end of Gleeson's first over, and his next one went for 22.
Oh, that's going to hurt. That really has going to hurt. That's up there with Jofra Archer dropping Aaron Finch earlier in the season.
Yeah. I was going to say also, as Matt alluded to earlier, if you look at their bowling statistics from the season, it's been absolutely woeful. I think their most economical bowler has been the overseas leg spinner, Prasanna.
Yep.
And he's been going at close to nines. And if that's your frontline sort of best bowler,
yeah,
it's raised some serious concerns.
It is, and it's hard to see how they can get out of it as well. I mean, this season they may just have to give up as lost, because with 7 games left, they've got to win all 7. They've got to turn around what is a diabolical net run rate, and they've got to hope that 15 points is enough to qualify for the group. I mean, you would think if they won those 7 games, it might be, because they'll be taking points off other teams, obviously. That's maths, isn't it? But, yeah, I mean, you'd got to save any Matt one more loss, and then Northants could be basically the first side out of the T20.
Yeah, I think the writing is very much on the wall for them. I wanted to pick up, you mentioned Tim's excellent piece about their Moneyball approach, and I was thinking they could probably do worse than re-signing Azarullah.
Well, indeed.
Who was a star of their triumph in 2016, I think it was, but is currently playing for Worcester and Derbyshire seconds on trial, so I wonder if, well, I mean, he can't do much worse than the rest of their attack, given they're going at 10s, 11s, 12s, 15s in that Worcestershire loss.
I mean, he's hugely popular as well at the county. I mean, the fans love him, players really love him. He's a bit surprised that they let him go. Briefly, Durham played the one game. They won it on a slow, rather miserable surface, it has to be said, at the Riverside. It was a tough game to watch, but they looked back to, they looked like they could contend. Would that be fair, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think Graham Clark's had a good season at the top of the order, brother of Jordan, the Lancashire all-rounder, and you know, it's a rare bit of good news at Durham in the past few years, because they've really struggled since they had that points deduction at the start of last season. And I think, again, with a fairly journeyman, bits and pieces sort of aside, Paul Collingwood became the oldest player in English domestic T20 at 42 years old for them. They've got some young bowlers, James Whale, Liam Travascus, I think, is in there. And yeah, I think it's an interesting side. There's a lot of teams that look much stronger on paper in the North group.
They do, but and yet they keep bringing out these results. I mean, 10 points from 7 games is good going. They've got a good net run rate as well. It was a comprehensive win against Notts. And maybe, I mean, you know, Paul Collingwood, which I used to see his name on the team sheet, maybe we're not giving him Bardwaj enough respect and kudos. I mean, he bowled really well. He's a very important member of their lower middle order. He's still going strong, genuinely strong.
I think is he the oldest player to play in the Vitality?
Yeah.
I think he's still doing it, really. A fair play to him. But I think also Durham have been greatly boosted by their overseas signings as well. I think, do they regret Imran Tahir before the start of the Blast? And he's been pretty good, I think, as a leg spinner. He's been very economical. Economy rate, I think, below 7.
And it's going to give you a boost in having a name that big, especially given the crises that Durham have had over the last, well, year and a half, 2 years, just to know that somebody wants to come and play for you. There's been a sense amongst the fans, you know, that everybody's just leaving us. Yeah, Stoneman's gone, Jennings goes, Borthwick goes. So somebody of the profile of Tahir sticking his hand up and saying, yeah, I'll come to Durham, has got to be a boost for the team and for the fans, isn't it?
I think Tahir, over the course of his career, has shown very much that he's a guy who'll play for anyone.
Play for anyone, yeah.
Durham, so.
That's impressive. Finally, Worcestershire, before we move to the South Group. They're still going well. They're the second in the table, 11 points from 8 games. They feel like a quality side. They've got power with the bat, and they real power. And I know we talked about Guptill, but there's Travis Head, there's Joe Clark. There are other players that we will come to talk about shortly.
Yeah, it's interesting, more it'll be interesting to see how they cope with the losses of Guptill and Head, who are both off after the washout on Sunday. And they're being replaced by Callum Ferguson and Wayne Parnell, the team. So not exactly like-for-like switches. But then again, you've got Joe Clark at the top of the order. He's scoring at a strike rate in excess of 200, striking the ball with real power and looking every bit the England prospect he's being talked of.
Bit of a blow to lose Moeen Ali, because they might have thought that Moeen wasn't going to get picked for the England test team. He has been, and you sort of suspect that if he's back in the test squad now, he's going to be there for at least the next two or three test matches. By the time those are done, T20 group stages are virtually over.
Yeah, I think everyone was a bit surprised maybe with Moeen's inclusion in the squad, but it is what it is. And he's been opening for Worcestershire, hasn't he, recently? I think Moeen, he opened last match, I think.
Yeah, not the last match. No, that was the Guptill head, wasn't it? Yeah. But I mean, they would have wanted him to, wouldn't they, with the departure of Guptill. So that feels like a bit of a blow, but you kind of sense that the way they've been playing their white ball cricket this season, they feel like one of my top shouts to at least be in the top four.
Yeah, definitely. And they've got a handful of bowlers that have really stepped up as well. Ed Barnard's obviously been talked about before. Pat Brown's really doing a job as well with the ball. He's one of two University of Worcester students doing well, along with Dylan Pennington. There's a handful of guys that are really stepping up, sort of looking like useful county pros, as well as they're obviously the big names.
And I'm delighted to say that you have left one name out of that, because that allows me to segue seamlessly and deliciously into an interview that you, Matt, did with this man. He's a T20 specialist. You wonder, actually, if he played in Australia, he might have made his name in a big bash league. If he were Australian, he might well be playing for Australia. He's that kind of a T20 specialist. We are talking, of course, about Ross Whiteley, and you got the opportunity to catch up with him earlier this week.
Ross, a great win at Northampton on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the highest quality hitting you could possibly want to watch, really. It was something pretty special from Martin Guptill.
And you and him go back a few years, don't you?
Yeah, we spent a few years at Derby together, lived together as well, so he's quite a close friend, so it's quite exciting having him come back and playing in the same team. Yeah.
And a great start to your Blast campaign so far. Did you expect to be top of the group at this stage?
I think we always expect to be somewhere near the top. We've got such a dangerous team. I think we've got a real good group of youngsters now with a lot of experience, and obviously coming off the back of the 50-over competition as well.
And on a personal note, some important knocks from yourself in your finisher role. How's that been going for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice obviously to contribute to a few wins as well and get a few runs. All adds to that confidence and stuff. And hopefully, I think 7 games left now, so if I can have a few more of those, it'd be nice.
I'm sure you don't need reminding that Worcestershire are one of two counties never to have made it to finals day. Is this the year you finally put things right?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's frustrating. And obviously for the fans as well, and the cricket we've been playing so far, it's really frustrating that we haven't made it there yet, but hopefully this year's the year, yeah.
Brilliant, cheers.
Well done. So remind me, he says again that this could be their time.
Yeah, we've not been to... I think it's them and Derby are the two teams that have never been to finals day.
Brilliant, them and Derby.
And yeah, he says, you know, this could be the year, or let's hope this is the year.
Lovely.
Well.
So there you have it, Ross Whiteley, hoping that finally this could be the year that Worcestershire make it to finals day. In one word, both of you, starting with you, Matt, are they finals day material?
Yeah.
Bardwaj?
Yes.
Definitely yes, it can be too. I'll let you off that. Okay, into the South Group. We've left it because there have only been 4 actual results in the South Group. The weather finally breaking. For those of you listening abroad, you may say, what are you talking about? Well, we've had about 10 weeks of unbroken sunshine. Our outfields look like Mumbai maidens. It's quite extraordinary. But finally rain has come, and it destroyed 3 matches. Kent against Sussex, Glamorgan against Kent, and Sussex and Hants. So Kent ended up picking up 2 points anyway this week, but not the way they would have wanted it. We had another rain-affected game, and let's start with that one, Bardwaj, because you were there. I was also there in hospitality, so I wasn't following it with quite the same acuity as you were. But it was a T10. Now, one of my colleagues in the BBC, Kevin Hand, has been very, very vociferous about how T10 is the way forward for the For the other competition that's due to come in 2020, the city-based tournament, we got a little taster of T10. What did you make of it?
To be honest, I wasn't really a fan of it. I was looking forward to a nice 2020, but unfortunately the rain had other ideas. And I think it shows how it's just a very hit-and-miss game when Somerset were, I think they were 45-6 quite early on, and you scramble your way up to 99 off your 10. And you think 100 runs, and you have Jason Moore and Aaron Finch opening up for Surrey. Is it really going to be a game? And I think the answer was quite clear after the power play when they took 56 for naught of 3 overs.
Yeah, so the reduced power play, of course.
Yeah. And I think it showed that T10 cricket is maybe what some fans would hope for, a lot of sixes, wickets in a very short period of time. But in terms of the quality of cricket and sort of the standard it has, I don't think it's really a viable solution.
For me, the really big issue was that because the nature of the game, the toss is really important. You win the toss, you're always going to bowl. So you may as well take the toss out of it, really, just alternate. And then, because you tee off massively, and you have to, there's no other way. I mean, you've got 10 wickets in hand and there's 10 overs to bowl. So you just tee off instantly. And once that happens, if you get unlucky, you lose a few wickets, your main strikers are out. If you get lucky, they're not. And for Surrey, after 3.5 overs, or 3.4 overs before the wicket came, there were 69 without loss chasing 100. The game was effectively done and dusted within 3.4 overs of the reply. It was sort of done and dusted almost after the first over, which went for 20. There was no real chance for the game to breathe, it felt like to me. It was an undeniably tremendous performance from Surrey. They were better with the ball, better in the field, much better with a bat, Matt, but There's no nuance in a game, is there, that's 10 overs aside?
Yeah, and Andy Hurry, Somerset's director of cricket, after the game said, we knew 99 was way too small a total. We knew we had to attack and set aggressive fields in the first couple of overs. And unsurprisingly, Jerome Taylor, on his first appearance as overseas player, first over went for 20. I personally think that it's, again, the toss is definitely overly important in a 10-10 game, and I think the chasing team always has a huge advantage, so personally I can't see it catching on. But I do understand Kevin Hearn's argument that says, if you're going to make it different, let's make it very different, let's put two T10s back to back, let's give the fans some kind of a spectacle in the hope that one of them will turn into a decent contest, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and I don't want to dismiss it out of hand as a concept, but and also, and I want to say quite clearly that the team that played better cricket that night definitely won. I mean, it wasn't a lottery in that sense that the better players or the better team lost. You know, the Surrey were absolutely dominant. They were terrific with the ball, crucial for their prospects at Tom Curran back and back bowling as well. And he had to bowl 2 overs, but he looked back to fitness. That makes Surrey a pretty formidable side. They're going to lose Sam Curran in this test series. We expect him probably, I mean, unless Chris Wokes comes back in shortly, but it would be after the Lord's Test anyway. So Surrey have got a plan without Sam Curran for at least the next 12 days, 2 weeks. Having Tom Curran back sort of solves the selection nightmare, but they're looking like a very strong side, aren't they? After those first 2 losses, when they were depleted, they've had 4 subsequent games, 3 wins, 250 for 5 against Kent in a match that was then rained off. They're looking among the more powerful batting lineups, would you not say?
Definitely. I think Rory Burns was dropped even for Finch,
yeah,
which says a lot. I mean, if you look at Burns' form this season, it's been incredible. And a lot of people were saying he should have had an England call up. Jason Roy said he was really disappointed that he wasn't, and said he obviously deserved it, is what he said. And I think the fact that Burns can't get into that top order shows just how strong it is.
Exactly, because his T20 form has been good. It's not just that he's been scoring runs, he's been scoring them at quite a lick as well. But the bowling attack as well, I think, impresses me. They're starting to look like an all-round side, sorry. Obviously with Curran, Durham back, but Ricky Clark, there's a guy who's a classic. I think he's right in the sweet spot of his T20 career. I think he really relishes the fact that he's only got to bowl 4 overs and he can fling the bat with gay abandon. He knows his game inside out. He's at a great age. It feels like this could be a sort of halcyon year for Ricky Clark, and that will very much please George DeBell, Matt.
Of course, yeah. I think Ricky Clark's a very, you know, everyone knows his talents now as a cricketer. I think he's a very useful guy coming in the middle overs. He's always going to give you another option with the ball. I think the question for Surrey is probably what will happen if somehow their top order manages to lose the current form that they're in. If Aaron Finch suddenly if the runs dry up for him, can they cope with that loss? And I suppose the first two games will be a slight cause for concern on that front, but equally, the way Ollie Pope's batting, the way Ben Foulkes is batting, they look a pretty strong outfit.
And Ricky Clark and Maddinson is going to fire at some point. Remind us of Aaron Finch's stats this year, if you can. I think he's had four matches, two not outs. How many runs is that?
315,
an average of 157.5. So he tops the batting average, unsurprisingly, with that.
A strike rate of 185 as well.
That is not shabby. He holds the world record for the most number of runs in a T20 international. He holds the world record for facing the most number of balls in a T20. He's a number one ranked player, number one ranked batsman at any rate, in T20. What's amazing about him, I'd say, is his consistency in a format like T20. The fact that he rarely fails. He's been lucky, but he's rarely failed.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that longest innings game down at Hove when he was dropped on one by Jofra Archer, one of the costliest drops you'll see over the course of a T20 match. But yeah, the power with which he was sort of taking down a real calculated assault on Rashid Khan, one of the best leg spinners in the world. He's been a very impressive addition, and also, yeah, jump. I suppose it also shows from Surrey's point of view the importance of having an overseas player who's been playing cricket, because although he doesn't necessarily net that much while he's here, he probably doesn't train as much. Mm. I know you were talking about his mid-season jet off to Berlin with his wife, but when he's been playing in Zimbabwe in that tri-series and been in fine form, that's pretty much perfect, rather than having a guy who's, you know, maybe flying in. Nick Maddinson, for example, hasn't played a lot of cricket since the end of the Australian season, and it's no real surprise that he's struggled a bit more with the bat.
Well, indeed, and it was noticeable that Finch played in the four-day game against Nottinghamshire, which Surrey won by an innings and 183 runs. Didn't score any runs, but he wanted to play, he wanted to keep his hand in. Three other games produced results, and two of them involved Middlesex. Middlesex, who went that sort of 10, 12 days without playing a game. They played two games this week. They won their first one against Hampshire, quite comfortably in the end. It didn't look at all comfortable. They looked like they were heading for a thumping at Lord's, and then Hampshire absolutely imploded. And then they got thrashed by Somerset, considerably thrashed. Let's look a bit more in depth at Middlesex, because they are a totally baffling side to me. They should be, should they not, so much better than they are?
So yeah, their win on Thursday against Hampshire was actually on the 10th anniversary of their last T20 Cup win. And since then, they've made one quarter final and come bottom of the group three times. So it's been a disastrous decade, really, for Middlesex.
It's almost like you researched that.
But yeah, they've been very poor under Vittori this season, who is sort of flattered to deceive his T20 coach. I don't know whether that's a case of him flying in a few days before the start of the tournament, not really having a chance to implement his methods. I don't think many of the Middlesex side take T20 particularly seriously. With the notable exception, of course, of Paul Sterling.
But why wouldn't you, though? I mean, you're playing a lot of your games at Lord's in front of massive crowds. It must be a thrilling experience. You'd think they'd all be clamouring to get in that side and have that Friday night, Thursday night, probably Thursday nights mostly, I think, at Lord's, to get that buzz, wouldn't you? I mean, it's they've got everything set up to have a really good team.
Yeah, and the body language has been pretty poor as well. I was at the game on Thursday, and despite the fact that they had a comeback, that was almost entirely down to a terrible display of middle and lower order batting.
It was abysmal, wasn't it? Hampshire, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a team hole out to the fielder and the deep as often and as regularly as they did. They would knock a couple of singles about, and I think they lost 26 for 7 or something like that.
But it was good bowling, good discipline bowling. And, you know, this, despite having tossed away Ryan Higgins, who's had a pretty good season for Gloucestershire with both bat and ball. I mean, they've got the bowling. They've maybe missing a touch of firepower, do you think, in a batting barrage? I mean, there's Sterling and Morgan, but they don't feel like they bat quite as strongly as they ought to bowl.
Yeah, no, I don't think they do. Their bowling, I think, is probably their strength at the moment. But I think Dwayne Bravo's, he headed off now as well, and he was provided a bit of firepower down the order. He got a quick 22 against Hampshire, was it?
And he gives you so much with both bat and ball. That's a big loss to a team that can ill afford it, frankly, because they got 5 points from 7 games, so they're still in there or thereabouts, but they've lost 4. You don't want to be losing more than another couple out of the last 7 games. So at some point, they've got to get a roll on. And look, eyes are going to turn on Vettori because he's a T20 specialist coach. And yet, what's he really got on his CV in terms of success in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think Vettori is underwhelmed both at RCB, Brisbane Heat and at Middlesex now. He's still got a year left on his deal. I doubt he's there completely cheaply. But yeah, and I suppose the other difficulty is that if Middlesex do crash out, there'll be quite a few of their fans who will probably think, well, this is the point to give young players a go. But given that Vettori is only going to be based on results during that short block, he's probably going to want to keep picking as strong a side as he can to try and sort of add some respectability to his own CV.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult position for them to be in, and I guess it also does ask the question of, yeah, how possible is it, given the current setup of county cricket, to have a specialist short-form coach? It's something that will obviously happen when the new competition comes in. Those sides will have a coach who will work with a separate group of players and will have the time to actually implement their own methods, have specific training sessions to work on those skills. But I think Vettori does suffer from that. I know on the eve of their tournament opener against Surrey, Vettori held an optional training session, which is quite a strange idea to sort of give Bravo a hit before he arrived, and 5 people turned up to it. So
that's not great. that doesn't show a great deal of enthusiasm, I would say.
But Vettori did turn up at quite a tough time at Middlesex. Didn't their county championship coach leave a few weeks before he arrived, or was it actually a few days?
Yep.
And Middlesex's form in the county championship wasn't as good as it was probably expected of them. And so he did turn up at quite a tough time. But still, if you look at the grander picture of Vettori's T20 coach like role, if you look at Bangalore, it's just been criminal how he's failed to win, or at least qualify that often with them. With probably one of the best squads on paper in the competition.
It does feel like that. I don't want to criticise a man called Daniel who wears glasses too much, though. So I'm gonna have a moratorium on attacking Daniel Vettori, but all your comments are noted. Right, we'll just wrap up the South group with, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. Gloucestershire beat Glamorgan, so they're still going very nicely. He's played 6-9 points up near the top of the top of the table. They've got a game in hand over Kent, who are top. Those two sides, Kent, Gloucestershire on 9 points. Somerset with 8 from 7. Sussex with 8 from 6. The South group's played fewer games, one round fewer, you'd say. Surrey tucked in mid-table, 7 from 6, but with a massive net run rate. So if they win their next game, that puts them there and thereabouts at the top. Glamorgan 5 from 6, Middlesex 5 from 7, Hampshire and Essex down the bottom. Gloucestershire are a side that continued to confound. Benny Howe was written about quite brilliantly by Jared Kimber in the pages of ESPN Crick Info this week. He's quite some player, and Klinger is also now getting some runs. So we're starting to see that Gloucestershire that we had a year ago, 2 years ago, starting to re-emerge, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Gloucestershire, for me, are a very likeable side at the moment in T20 cricket. They've got a guy, Miles Hammond, opening the batting. He's kind of playing an Ed Pollock role. He's not scored any particular runs this season, averaging 19, 20, something along those lines. But it's striking the ball at a strike rate of 200 and getting them off to a flyer, which is exactly what they want him to do. Then lower down the order, you've got Jack Taylor, who's scoring runs like it's going out of fashion.
And he hits it hard. I mean, he is a spectacular batsman, isn't he?
And as we've mentioned, Ryan Higgins as well. He's obviously, I think, feels as though he's probably got a point to prove after leaving Middlesex, because he's always said that he sees himself as a batsman who bowls a bit, was used as a sort of bowling all-rounder at Middlesex, and is now opening the bowling for Gloucestershire in the county championship and a key component of their T20 side.
He is, and with Andrew Tye supplementing that, I mean, that game against Glamorgan, Tye took 3 for 17, Higgins 3 for 34, and he got 30 off 22 balls. Klinger 77 not out. I mean, there's a lot of players in that Gloucestershire side who are contributing. They're not all winning games single-handedly, but they've got a lot of players who don't let them down, which is sort of what you need. Over the course of a T20 season, it's not, is it, that you get through because you've got one powerhouse, as Royal Challengers Bangalore have discovered. It's the fact that you can have 6 or 7 players in a T20 contribute across both disciplines.
I completely agree. But I think, actually, the signing of Andrew Tye, as you mentioned earlier, was a really smart piece of business for them. I think he's one of the best bowlers in T20 cricket at the moment. he was sort of pioneered, I think, the reinvention of the slower ball after Dernbach's first use a while ago, which wasn't as successful as it is now. And I think if you look at his record in the IPL as well, he's just a fantastic player. And I think he's also quite a big name to have at the county as well. And I think he's been a real bonus with them. I think he's really been key to their...
And again, it's an unfashionable county. I mean, just as we were talking about Imran Tahir at Durham, having a player like Ty at Gloucestershire boosts everybody. You know, they're not a club with an enormous amount of money, and they're not, as I say, they're not enormously fashionable. Finally, Somerset. They lost that one against Surrey. We looked at that. They then thrashed Middlesex. It's been an in-and-out week for them. 1-1, lost one. But Gregory, Lewis Gregory, I want to talk about him. He's often quite maligned by Somerset fans who don't know whether he's a batsman or a bowler. They then sort of decide that he's not really one of either. Well, this week, he got that unbeaten 50 against Surrey. I know it was in a losing cause, but it made a proper game of it off 23 balls. He then hit 26 ball, 61. So both of these unbeaten innings, he's had 111 runs this week in 49 balls. He picked up 4 for 28 as well. It's just been his kind of week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a good time to be Lewis Gregory as well. He's just signed a 3-year contract extension at the club. He'd really struggled with the bat as well in the first half of the season, and suddenly the return of T20 has definitely helped him out. I mean, he opened the batting for Somerset last year in a sort of pinch hitter role back down the order as a finisher this year, and he's been fantastic in the past couple of games, really. And I think even sweeter to do it against two sides he was quite heavily linked with earlier in the season in Surrey and Middlesex. So yeah, I'm sure Somerset's fans will be delighted that he's back in the runs and the wickets.
Right, lastly, on the Vitality T20 Blast, I want your player of the week, both of you, and I want your unfortunately abysmal bowling analyses of the week. So let's start with you, Matt.
So yeah, I think carrying on, I'll give mine to Lewis Gregory. I think, yeah, as I say, it's a fantastic time to be Lewis Gregory. And he'll be hoping that he can captain Somerset through to the quarterfinals.
I think that's entirely fair. Bardwaj, where are you going?
I was going to say Gregory as well.
No, you can't.
I can't now. I'll be quite boring and say Aaron Finch, because watching him on Friday night, I haven't seen anyone make batting look that effortless for a long time. He just looked like one of the best players I've seen live for a very long time, so I have to give it to him.
I'll give you that. I want to make a quick sort of a shout out, I suppose. I don't like using that word. For two Yorkshire batsmen at the top of the order, Tom Coler-Cadmore and Adam Lythe. We talk a lot about Finch and Roy, and, you know, we've seen them. We're based down south. Coler-Cadmore and Lythe, between them, hit 113 runs off 46 balls this week against Birmingham. And Adam Lythe is just one of those guys. People are starting to get to realise that he's a very good T20 player, but he's a very good T20 player. He scores in extraordinary numbers of sixes. I just wonder if there isn't a space for him again for England. Am I being daft?
I think it would depend, again, what route England are going to go down with their T20 international picks.
But think how much fun it would be if Yorkshire lost another player.
I think Hobsey would implode with that. I mean, if England went down the Australian route of selecting two different teams in white ball cricket, so very much a 50-over team and a 20-over team, I don't think it would be beyond the realms of possibility that Adam Lyles could get a recall. But I think all the current evidence points to the fact that that World T20 team they'll pick in 2020 is going to be a very similar lineup to what they picked for the World Cup.
It feels like that, but I just wanted to give him some kudos because he keeps on piling on the runs. Now for abysmal bowling analyses of the week, and it's unfair, but I like to do this every week because T20 is a graveyard of bowlers' hopes, and it creates some beautiful numbers, and I love my beautiful numbers. For me, my favourite numbers of this week, we've touched on it earlier, 1.5-0, 39-0. They go to Tim Bresnan, who was taken down by that lad. I don't know. It just looks beautiful to me. If you can concede 39 runs in under 2 overs, that's a beautiful-looking bowling analysis. I do like any bowling analysis that have 3 overs for 50-odd. Now, I think, am I right in saying that Onions, that's right, Graham Onions, another ex-England bowler, 3 overs, 2 for 54 for Lanks against Notts. That's also lovely, isn't it? When you get into the 50s, but you haven't made it to the 4th over. Can you improve on either of these?
I was going to give a quick shout out to Jerome Taylor on Somerset debut, whose first over went for 20, as we touched upon earlier, and his 10 balls ended up going for 29, wicketless.
That's not bad.
Which is that is the impact that you want your overseas signing to be making, really, so.
It is.
Well, I was going to widen out Somerset's burning unit in that game. I think they had 15 wides in a chase of 100.
That's not helpful.
I think that's criminal. 15 wides in a chase of 100. I think that just, you know, that's never a good sign. Even when you have Finch and Roy opening up, that's the last thing you want.
That is. And they should basically be forced to march through the streets of Taunton and be pelted with eggs, flour and tomatoes. Right. Just before we go, quick update on the KSL. The rain has affected the KSL this week, so we haven't really got as much to talk about as we'd like to. There have been some up and down pitches that the women have been playing on. There was a match that produced, 140-odd runs in 12 overs in a game reduced to 6 overs a side. And then another match that produced barely over 200 runs in 39 overs. Pitches seem to be very important, Matt.
Yeah, I think so, in boundary sizes as well. We saw that game at the Rose Bowl, the Aegeus Bowl, I should say. Other insurance brands are available. I think the boundaries were way out. It was a terrible, slow, tacky wicket. I know you have a theory that in women's T20 it's probably more of a factor than men's.
I think you get an exponential reduction in quality of game because of there's not quite as much power in a game. So if that ball just loses a bit of pace, I think you lose more entertainment value than you do in men's cricket, which is why, to me, it's imperative that the surfaces are true and fast and hard, as they were the other day in the rain-affected game. So, but intriguingly, the Vipers, who have been the standout side in the KSL, really, for the last 2 years, struggling a little bit for once.
Yeah, and I would also like to give a mention to Lancashire Thunder, who I think won their first game in just under 2 years the other night. Ellie Thrall called a 19-year-old wicketkeeper, took four stumpings.
I mean, that's
50 in the first inning. So yeah, I think they look like, for the first time really in the KSL's admittedly brief history, like they've got a decent shout at qualification.
It's a congested area, the wicketkeeping slot for England, because another England wicketkeeper, Sarah Taylor, posted her first 50 for Surrey this week. And they've got Amy Jones as well. So it's tough to break in as a keeper. There's something going on, though, in English cricket, both in men and women, in the odd watch, where England seem to produce an enormous number of keeper batters. Yeah. It's bizarre.
Sarah Taylor's glove work, from what I've seen, is fantastic. There's one memorable leg side stumping, which I saw, which I was particularly impressed by. But even if you look at the men's cricket, you've got Joss Butler, Johnny Bairstow, all very capable glovemen.
Ben Folkes, yeah.
I think... he's been very hard done by. Any other time he was playing cricket for England, I think he would be definitely on the fringes, but he's more so than he is now. So I think, yeah, a lot of wicket keepers around.
So quick congratulations to Emily Rainford Brent, because Surrey have posted a victory. They then got stuffed by the weather yesterday. Concerns for the Vipers, intrigue for Lancashire. We're hoping that this week's weather will relent and we'll be able to get our teeth into a bit more KSL action next week. But from us until next week, when I think we've got Will McPherson coming in. I want to thank the youth wing. Just briefly, because since I've got the youth wing here, before we sign off, T20 or four-day cricket, I asked Ollie Pope this question. Do you have a team you support?
Somerset, I follow.
Somerset. So that's slightly awkward, because obviously you need to win the county championship more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm very much a four-day man personally. And I'll be hopeful of a late season surge, but I don't really see us toppling your boys, to be honest, Norky.
Well, I hope you don't. But you're still capable of concentrating for 4 days. Bardwaj, do you get distracted at the slightest noise and have to, leave a 4 day game?
Not at all. I'm a Surrey fan, so that always helps, actually.
Yes, it will. This season, you'll be having a great time. Yeah, no difficulty concentrating. Yeah.
It's a joy to watch.
Fantastic. Well, lads, thanks ever so much for being on. Look out for pieces. You'll be at games this week, will you?
Yeah, I'm at Somerset on Friday night, I think it is.
Who are they playing?
Essex,
who didn't play this week, the one side in the, of the 18 not to play.
And they're struggling as well, so really need a win in that, I think.
That could be one of the big games of the week. Bardwaj, where are you?
I'm not anywhere actually this week, but the week after I'll try and head down around the country and see what's on.
I'm very delighted to say that I'm going to be at Sussex on Wednesday, and then I get to go to Nottingham on Saturday. So I'll be getting two games in. You'll be hearing more from me next Monday. But from Matt and from Bardwaj, thank you very much. Until next time, goodbye.
This is ESPN Crick Info.